and laugh, and made the crimson in Avienda's cheeks brighten and return to pure embarrassment. Rand half expected to hear an offer to dance spears. Well, not that exactly. Avienda had taught him that neither wise ones nor their apprentices did that sort of thing. But it would not surprise him if she boxed Nandera's ears. He spoke quickly to forestall any such thing.
"Since I caused Sulin to do what she did, don't I have toe toward her?"
Apparently it was possible to make a bigger fool of himself than he already had. Somehow Avienda's face grew redder still, and Jelani took a sudden interest in the carpet under her feet. Even Nandera looked a little chagrined at his ignorance. You could be told that you had toe, though that was insulting, or you could be reminded of it, but asking meant that you did not know. Well, he knew that he did. He could begin by ordering Sulin out of that ridiculous job as a servant, letting her put on cotton sore again, and stop her from meeting her toe. Anything he did to lighten her burden would interfere with her honor. Her toe, her choice. There was something in that, but he could not see what. Maybe he could ask Avienda. Later, when she would not die from mortification. All three women's faces made it clear he had embarrassed her more than enough for the time being. Light, what a mess. Wondering how he could find a way out, he realized he still held the letter Sulin had brought. He thrust it into a pocket and unbuckled his sword belt to lay it atop the dragon scepter, then retrieved the parchment. Who would send him a message by a rider who did not even stop for breakfast? There was nothing on the outside, no name. Only the now vanished courier could have said who it was directed to. Once more the seal was nothing he recognized, some sort of flower impressed in purple wax, but the parchment itself was heavy, of the most expensive sort. The contents, in a fine, lacy hand, brought a thoughtful smile.
"Cousin, the times are delicate, but I felt I must write to assure you of my good will and to express my hopes of yours in return. Never fear, I know you and acknowledge you, but there are those who would not smile on anyone who approached you save through them. I ask nothing save that you hold my confidences in the fires of your heart. Alejandra Maritha."
"What are you grinning at?" Avienda asked, peering at the letter curiously. There was still a touch of anger around her mouth for what he had put her through. "It's just pleasant to hear from somebody simple in her ways," he told her. The game of houses was simple compared with Giotto. There was enough of the name to let him know who sent it, but if the parchment fell into the wrong hands, it would seem a note to a friend, or maybe a warm reply to a petitioner. Alejandra Maritha Kigaran, Blessed of the Light, Queen of Gieldan, would certainly never sign a letter so intimately to someone she had never met, above all not to the Dragon Reborn. Plainly she was worried about the White Cloaks in Amadisia, and about the prophet Massima. He was going to have to do something about Massima. Alejandra was being cautious, not risking any more on paper than she had to, and she reminded him to burn this, the fires of his heart. Still, it was the first time any ruler had approached him without his sword at that nation's throat. Now if he could just find Elaine and give her Andor before he had another battle here. The door opened gently, and he looked up, but saw nothing, and returned to the letter, wondering whether he had dug out everything that was in it. Reading, he rubbed his nose. Luz Theron and his talk of death. Rand could not rid himself of that feel of filth.
"Jelani and I will take our places outside," Nandera said.
He nodded absently over the letter. Tom would probably find six things in the first glance that he had missed. Avienda put a hand on his arm, then snatched it away.
"Rand Althor, I must talk with you seriously."
Suddenly everything came together in his head. The door had opened. He was smelling filth, not just feeling it, but it was not really a smell. Dropping the letter, he pushed Avienda away from him, hard enough that she toppled with a startled yell. Clear of him, though, clear of danger. Everything seemed to have slowed down. And seized Saideen as he spun.
Nandera and Jelani were just turning back to see what had made Avienda shout. Rand had to look carefully to see the tall man in a gray coat that neither maiden saw at all as he glided right by them, dark, lifeless eyes fixed on Rand. Even concentrating, Rand found his own gaze wanting to slide past the gray man. That was what he was, one of the Shadow's assassins. As the letter was settling to the floor, the gray man realized Rand had seen him. Avienda's shout still hung in the air, and she was in mid-bounce from sitting down hard. A knife appeared in the gray man's hand, held low, and he darted forward. Rand wrapped him in coils of air almost contemptuously. And a wrist-thick bar of fire flashed past his shoulder, burned a hole through the gray man's chest, large enough for a fist. The assassin died before he could twitch. His head fell over, and those eyes, no more dead than they had been, stared at Rand. Dead, whatever had been done to the gray man to make him hard to see, no longer held. Dead, he suddenly was as visible as anyone else. Avienda, just starting to gather herself on the floor, gave a startled yelp, and Rand felt the goosebumps that told him she had embraced Zaidar. Nandera's hand jerked toward her veil with a bit-off exclamation, and Jelani half-raised hers. Rand let the corpse fall, but he held on to Saideen as he turned to confront Taim, standing in the doorway of his bedchamber. "Why did you kill him?" Only part of the cold hardness in his voice came from the void. "I had him captured. He might even have told me something. Maybe even who sent him. What are you doing here anyway, sneaking in through my bedroom?" Taim strolled in completely at ease, wearing a black coat with dragons entwined around the sleeves in blue and gold. Avienda scrambled to her feet, and despite Zaidar, her eyes said she was as ready to use her drawn belt knife on Taim as she was to sheathe it. Nandera and Jelani had veiled and stood poised on their toes, spears ready. Taim ignored them. Rand felt the power leave the man. Taim did not even seem concerned that Saideen still filled Rand. That peculiar, almost smile quirked his lips as he glanced at the dead gray man.
"Nasty things, the soulless."
Everybody else would have shivered. Not Taim.
"I came to your balcony by gateway because I thought you would want to hear the news right away."
"Somebody who learns too fast?" Rand broke in, and Taim flashed that half-smile again.
"No, not one of the Forsaken in disguise. Not unless he's managed to disguise himself as a boy not much past 20. His name is Jahar Narishma, and he has the spark, though it has not come out yet. Men usually show later than women. You should return to the school. You would be surprised by the changes."
Rand did not doubt it. Jahar Narishma was never an Andoran name. Traveling had no limits that he knew, but it seemed Taim's recruiting had ventured far afield. He said nothing, only glanced at the corpse on the carpet. Taim grimaced, but he was not out of countenance, only irritated.
"Believe me, I wish he was still alive as much as you do. I saw him and acted without thinking. The last thing I want is to see you dead. You seized him the moment I channeled, but it was too late to stop."
"I must kill him,"
Lutheran muttered, and the power surged in Rand. Frozen, he struggled to push Saideen away, and it was a struggle. Lutheran was trying to hang on, trying to channel. Finally, slowly, the one power faded like water draining from a hole in a bucket.
"Why?" he demanded. "Why do you want to kill him?"
There was no answer, only mad laughter and weeping in the distance. Avienda was looking at him with a face full of concern. She had put up her knife, but the tingle along his skin said she retained Zaidar. The two maidens had unveiled, now that it seemed clear Taim's appearance was no attack. They managed to keep one eye on Taim, one on the rest of the room, and still give each other abashed glances for some reason. Rand took a chair beside the table where his sword lay atop the dragon scepter. The struggle had lasted only moments, but his knees felt weak. Lutheran had almost taken over. Almost taken over Saideen, at least. Before at the school, he had been able to fool himself. But not this time. If Taim noticed anything, he showed no sign of it. Bending to pick up the letter, he glanced at it before handing it to Rand with a minimal bow. Rand stuffed the parchment into his pocket. Nothing shook Taim. Nothing disturbed his balance. Why did Luce Theron want to kill him?
The way you are all for going after the Aes Sedai, I'm surprised you don't suggest striking at Samael. You and me together, maybe a few of the stronger students, dropping right on top of him in Ilion through a gateway. That man had to come from Samael.
Perhaps, Taim said shortly, glancing at the gray man. I would give a great deal to be sure. That had the ring of simple truth. As for Ilion, I doubt it would be as simple as disposing of a pair of Aes Sedai. I keep thinking what I would do in Samael's place. I would have Ilion warded in boxes, so if a man even thought of channeling, I'd know right where he was. And I would burn even the ground to ash before he had time to take a breath.
That was how Rand saw it, too. No one knew better than Samael how to defend a place. Maybe it was just that Luce Theron was insane. Maybe jealous, too. Rand tried to tell himself he had not been avoiding the school because he was jealous, but he always felt a prickle of something around Taim. You've delivered your news. I suggest you go see to training this Jahar Narishma. Train him well. He may have to use his ability soon enough.
For a moment, Taim's dark eyes glittered. Then he bowed his head slightly. Without a word, he seized Sidene and opened a gateway right there. Rand made himself sit, empty, until the man was gone, the gateway thinning in a blazing line of light. He could not risk another struggle with Luce Theron. Not when he might lose and find himself fighting Taim. Why did Luce Theron want the man dead? Light Luce Theron seemed to want everybody dead, himself included. It had been a most eventful morning, especially considering that the sky was still gray. Good news outweighed bad. He eyed the gray man sprawled on the carpet. That wound had probably been cauterized as soon as made. But Mistress Harfour would be sure to let him know, without saying a word, if there was even one bloodstain. As for this seafolk wave mistress, she could stew in her own petulance for all of him. He had enough to handle without adding another touchy woman. Nandera and Jelani were still shifting from foot to foot near the door. They should have gone to their places outside as soon as Taim left. "If you two are upset over the gray man," he said, "forget it now. Only a fool expects to notice one of the soulless, except by chance. And neither one of you is a fool."
"It is not that," Nandera said stiffly.
Jelani's jaw was so tight she was plainly fighting to hold her tongue. Just that quickly he understood. They did not believe they should have spotted the gray man, but they were still ashamed they had not. Ashamed of that, and fearful of the shame of having word of their failure spread. "I don't want anyone to know Taim was here, or what he said. People are anxious enough knowing the school is somewhere near the city without being afraid Taim or one of his students will just appear. I think the best way is just to keep quiet about everything that happened this morning. We can't keep a corpse secret, but I want you to promise you'll say nothing except that a man tried to kill me and died for it. That's all I intend to tell anybody, and I'd hate for you to make me out a liar." The gratitude on their faces was remarkable.
"I have to,"
they murmured almost together. Rand cleared his throat roughly. That was not what he had been after, but at least he had eased their minds. Suddenly a way to deal with Sulin popped into his head. She would not like it, but it would still be meeting her toe, maybe the more so because she would not like it. And it would relieve his conscience somewhat, and at least meet some of his toe to her. "Get on to your guarding now, or I'll start thinking you want to stare at my eyebrows." That was what Nandera had said. Avienda was fascinated by his eyebrows. "Go on! And find somebody to haul this fellow away." They left, all smiles and flickering hand talk, and he stood, taking Avienda by the arm. "You said we had to talk? Come into the bedroom until this room is cleaned up. If there was a stain, maybe he could channel it out." Avienda jerked free.
No, not there.
Drawing a deep breath, she moderated her tone, but she still looked suspicious and more than a little angry.
Why can we not talk here?
No reason except a dead man on the floor, but that did not count with her. She pushed him back into his chair almost violently, then studied him, and took another breath before speaking.
Giotto is the core of the Aiel. We are Giotto. This morning you shamed me to the bone.
Folding her arms beneath her breasts and fixing him eye to eye, she lectured him on his ignorance and the importance of hiding it until she could rectify the matter, then went on to the fact that toe had to be met at all costs. She spent some time on that. He was sure this was not what she had meant when she said she had to talk with him, but he was enjoying looking into her eyes too much to wonder. Enjoying it. Bit by bit, he chased down the pleasure her eyes gave him and crushed it until only a dull ache remained. He thought he had hidden it, but his face must have changed. Avienda slowly trailed off and stood there staring at him, breathing hard. With a visible effort, she pulled her eyes away.
At least you understand now, she muttered. I need to... So long as you understand.
Gathering her skirts, she swept across the room. The corpse might as well have been a bush she had to step around. And out. Leaving him in a room dimmer for some reason, alone with a dead man. That fit all too well. When Gaishine came to bear away the gray man, they found Rand laughing softly. Padan Fane sat with his feet up on a hassock, studying the beauty of new-breaking sunlight, glittering on the curved blade of the dagger that he turned over and over in his hands. Carrying it at his belt was not enough. From time to time, he simply had to handle it. The large ruby set in the pommel shone with a deep malevolence. The dagger was part of him, or he of it. The dagger was part of Aradol, what men called Shadalogeth. But then, he was part of Aradol too, or it was part of him. He was quite mad and knew it very well. But being mad, he did not care. Sunlight gleamed on steel more deadly now than any made at Thakandar. A rustling caught his ear, and he glanced toward where the Murdral sat waiting his pleasure on the far side of the room. It did not try to meet his gaze. He had broken it of that long since. He tried to return to his contemplation of the blade, to the perfect beauty of perfect death. The beauty of what Aradhal had been and would be again. But the Murdral had broken his concentration. Spoiled it. He very nearly went over and killed the thing. Half-men took a long time to die. How long if he used the dagger? As if sensing his thoughts, it stirred again. No, it could be useful still. It was hard for him to concentrate on one thing for long anyway. Except Randall Thor, of course. He could feel Althor, could point to him, this close. Althor pulled at him, pulled till it hurt. There was a difference lately, a difference that had come suddenly, almost as if someone else had suddenly taken a partial possession of Althor, and in doing so pushed away a part of Fane's own possession. No matter, Althor belonged to him. He wished he could feel Althor's pain. Surely he had caused him pain, at least. Pinpricks only so far, but enough pinpricks would drain him dry. The white cloaks were set hard against the dragon reborn. Fane's lips peeled back in a sneer. Unlikely Niall would have ever supported Althor, any more than Elida would have. But it was best not to take too much for granted with Rand bloody Althor. Well, he had brushed them both with what he carried from Aridhol. They might possibly trust their own mothers, but never Althor now. The door burst open,
and young Perwin Bellman burst into the room, pursued by his mother. Nan Bellman was a handsome woman, though Fane seldom noticed whether a woman was or not now. A dark friend who had thought her oaths were just dabbling in wickedness until Padan Fane appeared on her doorstep. She believed him a dark friend, too, one high in the councils. Fane had gone far beyond that, of course. He would be dead the moment one of the Chosen laid hands on him. The thought made him giggle. Perwin and his mother both shied at the sight of the murderall, of course, but the boy recovered first and reached Fane while the woman was still trying to find her breath. "Master Mordeth! Master Mordeth!" the boy piped, dancing from foot to foot in his red and white coat. "I have news you wanted." Mordeth. Had he used that name? Sometimes he could not recall what name he had used. What name was his? Sheathing the dagger beneath his coat, he put on a warm smile. "And what news would that be now, lad?"
"Someone tried to kill the dragon reborn this morning. A man. He's dead now. He got right past all the Aiel and everything. Right into the Lord Dragon's rooms."
Fane felt his smile become a snarl. Trying to kill Althor? Althor was his. Althor would die by his hand, no other. Wait. The assassin had gotten past the Aiel into Althor's rooms?
"A gray man!"
He did not recognize that grating sound as his own voice. Gray men meant the Chosen. Would he never be free of their interference? All that rage had to go somewhere before he burst. Almost casually, he brushed his hand across the boy's face. The boy's eyes bulged. He began trembling so hard his teeth rattled. Fane did not really understand the tricks he could work. A bit of something from the Dark One, perhaps? A bit from Aridol. It had been after there, after he stopped being just Padan Fane, that the ability began to manifest. Slowly. All he knew was that he could do certain things now, as long as he could touch what he worked with. Nan flung herself to her knees beside his chair, clutching at his coat.
"Mercy, Master Mordeth," she panted. "Please have mercy. He's only a child. Only a child."
For a moment he studied her curiously, head tilted. She was quite a pretty woman, really. Planting a foot against her chest, he shoved her aside so he could stand. The murderall, peeking furtively, jerked its eyeless face away when it saw him watching. It remembered his tricks very well. Fane paced. He had to move. Althor's downfall had to be his doing. His, not the Chosen's. How could he hurt the man again? Hurt to the heart. There were those nattering girls at Kulain's Hound, but if Althor did not come when the Two Rivers was harrowed, would he care even if Fane burned the inn down and the chits with it? What did he have to work with? Only a few remained of his one-time Children of the Light. That had only been a test, really. He would have made the man who actually managed to kill Althor beg to be skinned alive. Yet it had cost him numbers. He had the murderall, a handful of Trollocs hidden outside the city, a few dark friends gathered in Camelin and on the way from Tarvalin. The pull of Althor dragged him on. It was the most remarkable thing about dark friends. There should be nothing to single out a dark friend from anyone else. But of late he found he could tell one at a glance, even someone who had only thought of swearing to the shadow, as if they had a sooty mark on their foreheads. No, he had to concentrate. Concentrate! Clear his mind. His eye fell on the woman, moaning and stroking her gibbering son, talking to him softly as if that would help. Fane had no notion how to stop one of his tricks once it began. The boy should survive, if a trifle the worse for wear, once the thing ground to a conclusion. Fane had not put his whole heart into making it. Clear his mind. Think of something else. A pretty woman. How long since he had had a woman? Smiling, he took her arm. He had to pull her away from the fool boy. "Come with me." His voice was different, grander, the Lugard accent gone. But he did not notice. He never did. I am sure you, at least, know how to show true respect. If you please me, no harm will come to you.
Why was she struggling? He knew he was being charming. He was going to have to hurt her.
It was all Althor's fault.
Chapter 29. Fire and Spirit. Pausing in the shade in front of the little tower, Nynaeve carefully dabbed at her face, then tucked the handkerchief back up her sleeve. Not that it did much good. Sweat popped out again right away, but she wanted to look her best inside. She wanted to look cool, serene, dignified. Small chance of that. Her temples were throbbing, and her stomach felt fragile. She had not been able to look at breakfast this morning. Just the heat, of course, but she wanted to go back to her bed, curl up, and die. To top it off, her weather sense was nagging at her. The molten sun should have been hidden by roiling black clouds and threatening bolts of lightning. The warders lounging out front did not look like guards at first glance, but they were. They reminded her of the Aiel she had seen in the Stone of Tyr. They probably looked like wolves even when asleep. A bald, square-faced man, no taller than she, but nearly as wide as he was tall, trotted out of the little tower and down the street, the hilt of the sword on his back thrusting up over his shoulder. Even he, Jory, bonded to Morvryn, managed it. Top-knotted Uno passed, threading his horse through the crowd and hardly seeming to acknowledge the heat, despite the steel plates and mail that covered him from the shoulders down. He twisted in his saddle to watch her with his good eye, and her face darkened. Birgitta had talked. Every time the man saw her, he was obviously waiting for her to ask him for horses. She was almost ready to. Even Elaine could not say they were doing any good. Well, she could and did, but she should not. Uno rode out of sight around a corner, and Nynaeve sighed. She was just trying to put off going inside. Mirella might be there. Blotting her face again, she frowned at her wrinkled hand. Today would be the 11th scrubbing pots, with 29 more to go. 29! And went in. It was slightly cooler in what had been the common room when the little tower was an inn, offering a little relief to her aching head. Everyone called it the waiting room now. No time had been wasted for repairs here. The fireplaces had stones missing, and lathing showed through holes in the plaster. Arena and Nicola were working brooms with another novice, but making little impression on the age-roughened floor. Arena wore a scowl, but then she was never pleased at having to do chores with the novices. No one went choreless in Salidar. At the far end of the room, Romanda was speaking with two slender, aged Aes Sedai. Their faces might be ageless, but their hair was white. Plainly new arrivals by the thin dust cloaks still hanging down their backs. No sign of Mirella, which brought a sigh of relief. The woman raked Nynaeve over the coals at every opportunity, then raked her the other way. Aes Sedai sat at tables, mismatched but carefully arranged in rows, working over parchments or issuing orders to warders and servants, but fewer than the first time she had seen the room. Only the sitters and their servants lived on the floors above now. Everyone else had been removed to make space for Aes Sedai to work in. The little tower had taken on attributes of the White Tower, the precise formality above all. When Nynaeve first saw this room, it had had a bustle about it, an air of something being done. A false air, then. Now it seemed almost slow, but it was the feel of the White Tower. Approaching one of the tables, not the nearest, she curtsied carefully. "Pardon, Aes Sedai, but I was told Swan and Lyanna are here. Could you tell me where to find them?" Brenda's pen stopped moving, and she looked up with cool, dark eyes. Nynaeve had chosen her instead of someone nearer the door because Brenda's was one of the few Aes Sedai who had never grilled her about Rand. Besides, once, when Swan was Ommerlin, Swan had chosen Brenda's as one who could be trusted. That had nothing to do with this, but Nynaeve found small comforts where she could. They are with some of the sitters, child. Brenda's voice was chimes, as emotionless as her pale face. White seldom showed emotion, but Brenda's never showed any. Nynaeve stifled an irritated sigh. If sitters had them reporting on their eyes and ears, they might not be free for hours yet. Maybe not for the rest of the day. By then she would be head down among the pots. Thank you, Aes Sedai. Brenda stopped her curtsy with a gesture. Did Theodrin make any progress with you yesterday? No, Aes Sedai. If her voice was a bit tight, a touch curt, she had reason. Theodrin had said she meant to try everything, and apparently she really did mean everything. Yesterday's effort had involved sipping wine to relax her, only somehow Nynaeve had ended up taking more than just a few sips. She did not think she would ever forget being carried back to her room singing. Singing! Or remember without going red in the face. Brenda's had to know. Everyone had to know. Nynaeve wanted to writhe. I only ask because your studies seem to be suffering. I've heard several sisters remark that you appear to have reached the end of your remarkable discoveries. Your extra chores might be the problem, but Elaine reveals something new every day, even with teaching her classes and working at the pots. A number of sisters are wondering whether they might not be able to help you more than Theodrin can. If we took it in turns, working you all day, every day, might prove more fruitful than these informal sessions with someone who is, after all, little more than accepted herself. It was all delivered in a level tone without the slightest accusation, yet Nynaeve's face heated as if she had been shouted at. I'm sure Theodrin will find the key any day, Aes Sedai, she almost whispered. I will try harder, Aes Sedai. Bobbing a hurried curtsy, she whirled around before Brenda's could stop her again, with the result that she bumped into one of the two white-haired newcomers. They looked enough alike to be sisters in truth, almost mirror images of one another, with fine bones and long patrician faces. The bump was more of a brush, really, and she did try to apologize, but the Aes Sedai fixed her with a stare to do a hawk proud. Watch where you are going, accepted. In my day, an accepted who tried to trample Aes Sedai would have had hair whiter than mine by the time she finished scrubbing floors. The other touched her arm. Oh, do let the child go, Van Deen. We have work to do. Van Deen directed a sharp sniff at Nynaeve, but allowed herself to be led outside. Waiting a moment to let them leave, Nynaeve saw Shiriam come out of one of the meeting rooms with Mirella, Morvryn, and Beonin. Mirella saw her too and started in her direction, but only a step before Shiriam and Morvryn each put a hand on the green sister's arms and spoke quickly and softly, with many a glance at Nynaeve. Still talking, the four crossed the room and disappeared through another door. Nynaeve waited until she was back in front of the little tower before giving her braid a firm, deliberate tug. They had met the wise ones last night. Guessing why the others had stopped Mirella from speaking was easy enough. If Egwene had finally been there in the heart of the stone, she was not to be told. Nynaeve Almira was in disgrace. Nynaeve Almira was scrubbing pots like a novice when she might have been at least a step higher than accepted. Nynaeve Almira was getting nowhere with Theodrin, and all her marvelous discoveries had dried up. Nynaeve Almira would never be Aes Sedai. She had known it was a mistake to start funneling everything from Mogedion through Elaine. She had known it. Her tongue tried to curl up at the memory of a vile taste. Boiled catfern and powdered maven's leaf. An antidote she had used on many a child who would not stop lying. All right, she had been the one to suggest it herself, but it was still a mistake. Aes Sedai were no longer talking about her innovations. They talked about the lack of them. Aes Sedai, who had never taken more than a passing interest in her block, were now caught up in how to break it down. She could not win. One way or another, she was going to end up with Aes Sedai examining her from hair to toenails, sun up to sun down. She yanked harder on her braid, hard enough to hurt her scalp, and the way her head felt, that did nothing for her temper. A soldier in an archer's flat helmet and padded jerkin slowed to look at her curiously, but she gave him such a stare of refined malevolence that he stumbled over his own feet and quickly lost himself in the throng. Why did Elaine have to be so stubborn? A man's hands closed on her shoulders, and she whirled about with words that would rip his head from his neck. They died on her tongue. Tom Marilyn grinned down at her through his long white mustaches, sharp blue eyes twinkling in his gnarled face. "By the look of you, Nynaeve, I could almost think you were angry, but I know you have such a sweet disposition people ask you to dabble your fingers in their tea." Juelin Sandar was there beside him, the lean fellow looking carved from dark wood, leaning on his thumb-thick bamboo staff. Juelin was Tyran, not Taraboner, but he still wore that ridiculous flat-topped conical red cap, even more battered than she had last seen it. He snatched it off when she glanced at him. Both men were dusty and travel-worn, their faces gaunt, though neither had been particularly fleshy to begin with. They looked as if they had spent the week since leaving Salidar sleeping in their clothes when they were not in the saddle. Before Nynaeve could open her mouth, they were hit by a human storm. Elaine flung herself at Tom so hard he staggered. He, of course, put his hands under her arms and hoisted her, whirling her around in a circle like a child despite his slight limp. He was laughing when he set her down again, and so was she. She reached up and tugged at one of his mustaches, and they fell to laughing even harder. He examined her hands, as wrinkled as Nynaeve's, asking what sort of trouble she had dived into without him to keep her on the straight and narrow, and she replied that she had no need of anyone to tell her what to do, only she spoiled it by blushing and giggling and biting her lip. Nynaeve took a deep breath. Sometimes the pair of them took playing at father and daughter entirely too far. Sometimes Elaine seemed to think she was about 10, and so did Tom. "I thought you had a novice class this morning, Elaine." The other woman glanced at her sideways, then gathered herself in an attempt at decorum that came too late, and set about straightening her banded dress. "I asked Kalindin to take it," she said casually. "I thought I might keep you company, and I'm glad I did," she added with a grin for Tom. "Now we can hear everything you learned in Amadisia." Nynaeve sniffed. Keep her company, indeed. She did not remember everything about yesterday, but she remembered Elaine laughing while getting her undressed and putting her to bed with the sun not yet all the way down. And she was sure she remembered the woman asking whether she wanted a bucket of water to cool her head. Tom noticed nothing. Most men were blind, though he was sharp enough usually. "We will have to be quick," he said. "Now Shiriam's drained us dry, she means to have us report to some of the sitters in person. Luckily it boils down well enough. There aren't enough white cloaks along the Eldar to keep a mouse from crossing if he had drums and trumpets to announce him a day ahead. Except for a strong force on the Tarabon border and the men he has trying to hold back the Prophet in the north, Nile seems to be gathering every last white cloak around Amadisia, and Aelron is pulling in his soldiers too. Talk of Salidar had started in the streets before we left, but if Nile has even thought about the place twice, I could not find a hint of it anywhere." "Tarabon," Juelin muttered, studying his cap. "All ill country for anyone who doesn't know how to take care of herself, or so we heard." Nynaeve was not sure which of the two was best at dissembling, but she was sure either could lie to your face to make a wool merchant blue with envy. And right then she was sure they were hiding something. Elaine saw more than that. Gripping Tom's lapel, she peered up at him. "You heard something about Mother," she said calmly, and it was not a question. Tom knuckled his mustaches. "There are 100 rumors on every street in Amadisia, child, each wilder than the last." His gnarled, leathery face was pure innocence and openness, but the man had not been innocent the day he was born. "It's said the whole White Tower is here in Salidar with 10,000 warders ready to cross the Eldar. It's said Aes Sedai have captured Tanchico and Rand has wings he uses to fly around in the night, and..." "Tom," Elaine said. He snorted, glaring at Juelin and Nynaeve as though this were their fault. "Child, it's just a rumor as crazed as any we heard. I could not confirm anything, and believe me, I tried. I meant not to mention it. It just stirs up your pain." Let it pass, child. Tom. Much firmer. Shifting his feet, Julin looked as if he wished he were somewhere else. Tom just looked grim. Well, if you must hear it. Everybody in Amadisia seems to think your mother is in the Fortress of the Light, that she's going to lead an army of white cloaks back to Andor. Elaine shook her head, laughing softly. Oh, Tom, do you think I would worry over something like that? Mother would never go to the white cloaks. I could wish she had. I could wish she was alive, too, even though it violates everything she ever taught me, bringing foreign soldiers into Andor, and white cloaks, I could wish it. But if wishes were wings... Her smile was sad, but it was a muted sadness. I have done my grieving, Tom. Mother is dead, and I must do my best to be worthy of her. She would never have gone running after ridiculous rumors, or wept over them either. Child. He said awkwardly. Nynaeve wondered what, if anything, he himself felt about Morghese's death. Hard as it was to believe, he had been Morghese's lover once, when she was young, and Elaine little more than a babe. Back then he must not have looked as though he had been left to dry in the sun too long. Nynaeve knew little more of how or why it ended than that he had slipped out of Camelin with an arrest warrant at his heels. Not the mark of a love to be told in the stories. At the moment, he certainly appeared concerned only with whether Elaine was telling the truth or hiding her hurt, with patting her shoulder and stroking her hair. If Nynaeve had not wished they would just once snap at one another like normal people, she would have thought it a pretty picture. A throat clearing broke up the vignette. "Master Merilyn," Tabitha said, spreading her white dress in a quick curtsy. "Master Sandor, Shiriam Sedai says the sitters are ready to receive you. She says you were not supposed to leave the little tower." "The little tower, is it?" Tom said dryly, eyeing the former inn. "Elaine, they can't keep us forever. When we're done, you and I can discuss whatever you wish." Motioning Tabitha to lead, he marched inside, his limp obvious, the way it was when he was tired. Julin squared his shoulders and followed as though walking to a gallows. He was Tyran, after all. Nynaeve and Elaine stood there, neither quite looking at the other. Finally, Nynaeve said, "I was not," at the same time that Elaine said, "I should not." They cut off together, and moments passed in fidgeting with skirts and blotting faces. "It is too hot to just stand here," Nynaeve said at last. It was unlikely that the sitters who were hearing Swan and Liana's reports would stop to hear Tom and Julin's. They split such things among them. That left Loghain, much as she wished it did not. She would not learn anything. But it was better than twiddling her thumbs until a dozen Aes Sedai descended on her with an hourly schedule. With a sigh, she started down the street. Elaine came along as though she had been invited. That helped Nynaeve find the anger she was going to need. Abruptly, she realized that Elaine's wrists were bare. "Where is the bracelet?" she asked softly. No one in the street would understand if they heard, but caution once forgotten could be forgotten once too often. "Where is Maragan?" "The bracelet is in my pouch, Nynaeve." Elaine stepped aside to let a high-wheeled cart pass, then joined Nynaeve again behind the cart. "Maragan is doing our laundry with about 20 other women around her, and groaning every time she moves. She said something she didn't think Birgitta would hear, and Birgitta..." "I had to take the thing off, Nynaeve. Birgitta had the right, and it hurt. I told Maragan to say she fell down some stairs." Nynaeve sniffed, but her heart was not in it. She had not been wearing the bracelet much of late, not because she could not hand over anything she dug out as her own. She was still sure Mogedion knew something about healing, even if she did not realize it herself. Nobody could be that blind. And there was the trick of detecting a man's channeling that Mogedion kept saying they almost had right. The truth of it was, she was afraid she might do far worse than Birgitta had, if she had any more contact with the woman than was absolutely necessary. Maybe it was the way satisfaction seemed to underlie everything else, even when Mogedion was groaning from the fed-back pain of Nynaeve trying to master that detection. Maybe it was remembering how afraid she had been, alone with the woman without the bracelet. Maybe growing disgust at keeping one of the Forsaken from judgment. Maybe some of all of it. What she did know was that she had to make herself put on the bracelet now, and that whenever she saw Mogedion's face, she wanted to pound it with her fists. "I should not have laughed," Elaine said. "I am sorry I did." Nynaeve stopped dead so suddenly that a horseman had to jerk his reins to keep from riding over her. He shouted something before the crowd carried him away, but shock muffled his words beyond hearing. Not shock at the apology, at what she had to say. The right thing to say. The truth. Unable to look at Elaine, she started walking again. "You had every right to laugh." She swallowed hard. "I made a complete fool of myself." She had. "A few sips," Theodrin said. "A cup," and she emptied the pitcher. "If you were going to fail, better to have some other reason than that you just could not do it." "You should have sent for that bucket and dunked my head until I could recite the Great Hunt of the Horn without a mistake." She risked a glance from the corner of her eye. Small spots of color rested in Elaine's cheeks. So there had been mention of a bucket. "It could happen to anyone," the other woman said simply. Nynaeve felt her own cheeks heating. When it had happened to Elaine, she had dunked the girl to wash away the wine. "You should have done whatever you needed to sober me." It was quite the oddest argument Nynaeve could remember. With her insisting she had been a total fool and deserved whatever came of it, while Elaine made excuse after excuse for her. Nynaeve did not understand why it felt so refreshing, taking all the blame on herself that way. She could not recall ever doing that before, not without hedging as far as she was able. She very nearly got angry with Elaine for not agreeing that she had been a childish buffoon. It lasted until they reached the small thatched house on the edge of the village, where Loghain was kept. "If you don't stop this," Elaine said finally, "I vow I'll send for a bucket of water right this instant." Nynaeve opened her mouth, then closed it again. Even in this newfound euphoria of admitting she had been wrong, that was going too far. Feeling this good, she could not face Loghain. Feeling this good, it would be useless anyway, without Mogedion and the bracelet she definitely felt too fine to put on. She glanced at the two warders standing guard beside the stone-lintled door. They were not close enough to hear, but she still pitched her voice low. "Elaine, let's go. Tonight." With Tom and Julin in Salidar, there was no need to ask Uno to find horses. "Not to Camelin, if you don't want. To Ebudar. Merlilla will never find that bowl, and Shiriam will never let us go find it. What do you say? Tonight?" "No, Nynaeve. What good can we do Rand if they take us for runaways, which is what we'd be? You promised, Nynaeve. You promised if we found something." "I promised if we found something we could use. All we've found is this." Nynaeve thrust her shriveled hands under the other woman's nose. The firmness slid from Elaine's face and her voice. She pursed her lips and studied the ground. "Nynaeve, you know I told Birgitta we were staying. Well, it seems she told Uno that under no circumstances was he to provide you with a horse unless she said so. She told him you were thinking of running away. I didn't find out until it was too late." Her head tossed irritably. "If this is what having a warder is like, I don't know why anybody wants one." Nynaeve thought her eyes might burst from indignation. So that was why he had been staring at her. Euphoria vanished in a heat of, well, partly anger, partly humiliation. The man knew. He thought she... Wait. For a moment she frowned at Elaine, then decided not to voice the question that had come to mind. Was Nynaeve the only name Birgitta had mentioned to Uno? Or was Elaine perhaps included? Elaine had found herself quite an adopted family. In Tom, an indulgent father who wanted to teach her everything he knew, and in Birgitta, an older sister who thought it was her job to keep the younger from breaking her neck riding horses she could not handle yet. "In that case," she said flatly, "let's see what I can learn from Loghain." It was a small house, only 2 rooms, but thick stone walls made it relatively cool. Loghain was in his shirt sleeves, smoking a pipe and reading by a window. The Aes Sedai were taking good care of him. The chairs and tables were as fine as anything in Saledar. Nothing elaborate, but well-made, though nothing matched anything else, and a scroll-woven red and gold carpet covered much of a floor that was swept so clean, Nynaeve doubted he did the sweeping. He set his book down when they entered, seemingly not at all put out by the lack of a knock. Rising leisurely, he tapped out his pipe, donned his coat, and only then made a smooth leg. "It is good to see you again after so long. I thought you had forgotten me. Will you join me in some wine? The Aes Sedai keep me on short supply, but what they do let me have is not bad at all." The offer of wine would have been enough. Nynaeve barely suppressed a wince, if she had needed more. Thinking of Uno, the fact that he was male was enough. No need to pull up any of her anger from the little tower. Thinking of it added its bit, though. The true source was suddenly there, an unseen warmth just out of sight. She opened herself, and Saedar flooded her. If what she had felt earlier was euphoria, this was beyond ecstasy. She was surrendering to it. Burn Theodrin. "Sit down," she told him coldly. "I'll have no chatter out of you. Answer when you're spoken to, and otherwise hold your tongue." Loghain only shrugged and complied, meek as a puppy. No, not meek. That smile was pure insolence. Part came from his feelings toward Aes Sedai, Nynaeve was certain. And part... He watched Elaine take another chair, arranging her skirts with a studied care, and even if Nynaeve had not seen what he was looking at, she would have known it was a woman. There was no smirking about it, no leering, just... Nynaeve did not know what, only that he directed the same at her, and she was suddenly very much aware that she was a woman and he a man. Maybe it was just that he was handsome and had broad shoulders, but she liked to think better of herself. Of course, that was not it. Clearing her throat, she wove filaments of Saedar into him, air and water, fire and earth, spirit, all the elements of healing, but used now to probe. It would have helped to lay her hands on him, but she could not bring herself to do that. Bad enough to touch him with the power. He was healthy as a bull, and almost as strong. Nothing wrong with him in the slightest, except for the hole. It was not really a hole, more a feeling that what seemed continuous was not, that what seemed smooth and straight was really skirting around an absence. She knew that sensation well from the early days, back when she thought she might really learn something. It still made her skin crawl. He looked up at her intently. She did not remember moving closer. His face was fixed in a mask of brazen contempt. She might not be Aes Sedai, but she was the next thing to it. "How can you do all of that at once?" Elaine asked. "I could not keep track of half of it." "Hush," Nynaeve murmured. Hiding the effort required, she took Loghain's head in her hands roughly. Yes, it was better with physical contact, the impressions sharper. She directed the full flow of Saedar into where the hole should have been, and was almost surprised to find an emptiness. Of course, she still did not expect to learn anything. Men were as different from women in the power as they were in the flesh, maybe more so. She might as well study a rock to find out about fish. It was hard to keep her thoughts on what she was doing, knowing she was only going through motions, killing time, as it were. What is Mirella going to say? Would she keep back a message from Egwene? That emptiness, so small she could pass right over it, was vast once she slipped the flows inside, immense enough to swallow them all. If only I could talk to Egwene, I'll wager once she knows the tower is sending an embassy to Rand, and the Aes Sedai here are just sitting on their hands, she'll help me convince Elaine we've done all we can here. Vast emptiness. Nothingness. What about what she had found in Swan and Lyanna? The feel of something cut. She was sure it was real, however faint. Men and women might be different, but maybe... All I need to do is talk to her somehow. She'll see that Rand would be better off with us there. Elaine will listen to her. Elaine thinks Egwene knows Rand better than anybody else. There it was. Something cut. Just an impression, but the same as in Swan and Lyanna. So how do I find her? If only she'd pop into our dreams again. I'll bet I can talk her into joining us. The three of us would do much better with Rand. Together we could tell him what we learn in Telaran Riod, keep him from making some wool-headed mistake with the Aes Sedai. She'll see that. Something about that cut. If it was bridged with fire and spirit, so... It was the slight widening of Loghain's eyes that told her what she had done. Breath froze in her throat. She backed away from him so fast she stumbled over her skirt. "Nynaeve," Elaine said, sitting up straight. "What is the ma—" A heartbeat, and Nynaeve had all of Saidar she could hold redirected into a shield. "Go find Shiriam," she said hurriedly. "Nobody else but Shiriam. Tell her—" She drew a deep breath that seemed like her first in hours. Her heart was speeding to beat galloping horses. "Tell her I've healed Loghain." Chapter 30. To Heal Again. Something pushed against the shield Nynaeve had fastened between Loghain and the true source, building until the shield began to bend and the weave trembled on the brink of ripping apart. She let Saidar flow through her, sweetness reaching the very edge of pain, channeling every thread into spirit, into the shield. "Go, Elaine!" She did not care one bit if it came out a squeal. Elaine, the light shine on her, wasted no time on questions. She bounded out of her chair and was gone at a dead run. Loghain had not moved a muscle. His eyes held Nynaeve's. They seemed to shine. Light he was big. She fumbled for her belt knife, realized how ridiculous that was. He could probably take it away from her without sweating a drop more than he already was. His shoulders suddenly seemed as wide as she was tall, and diverted some of her weave to air, to bonds that fastened him right where he sat, arm and leg. He was still big, yet suddenly he looked more normal, entirely manageable. Only then did it occur to her that she had lessened the strength of the shield. But she could not channel a hair more. Already the pure joy of life that was Saidar was so strong in her that she nearly wanted to weep. He smiled at her. One of the warders put his head in at the door, a dark-haired man with a bold nose and a deep white scar running along his lean jaw. "Is anything amiss?" The other accepted. She went running like she had sat in the nettle patch. "Everything is quite under control," she told him coolly as she could manage. Nobody must know, nobody, until she had a chance to speak with Shiriam, to get the woman on her side. "Elaine just remembered something she had forgotten." That sounded inane. "You may leave us. I am busy." Tervale, that was his name, Tervale Dura, bonded to Baenin, and what under the light did his name matter? Tervale gave her a wry grin and a mocking bow before retreating. Warders seldom let accepted get by with playing at Aes Sedai. Not licking her lips took considerable effort. She studied Loghain. He was outwardly calm, as if nothing had changed. "There's no need for this, Nynaeve. Do you think I'll decide to attack a village with hundreds of Aes Sedai in it? They'd chop me to pieces before I took two steps." "Be quiet," she said mechanically. Fumbling behind her, she found a chair and sat down, never taking her eyes off him. Light, what was keeping Shiriam? Shiriam had to understand it was an accident. She had to. Anger at herself was the only thing that kept her able to channel. How could she have been so careless? Such a blind idiot. "Don't be afraid," Loghain said. "I won't turn against them now. They're succeeding in what I want, whether they know it or not. The Red Aja is finished. In a year there won't be an Aes Sedai will dare admit she's red." "I said be quiet," she snapped. "Do you think I'll believe it's only reds you hate? You know, I saw a man once who will cause more trouble than I ever did. Maybe it was the Dragon Reborn, I don't know. It was when they took me through Camelin after I was captured. He was far away, but I saw a glow, and I knew he'd shake the world. Caged as I was, I couldn't help laughing." Shifting a small portion of the air holding him, she forced it between his jaws for a gag. His brows lowered in dark anger, gone in a flash, but she did not care. She had him secure now. At least, he had not attempted to struggle at all, but that could be because he had known from the first that she would only snare him. It could. But how hard had he tried to break through her shield? That push, not exactly slow in building, but certainly not fast, almost like a man stretching muscles long unused, pushing at something not with the intent of moving it, but just from the need to feel those muscles again. The thought turned her belly to ice. Infuriatingly, Loghain's eyes crinkled in amusement, almost as though he knew everything that had passed through her head. He sat there with his mouth gaping foolishly, bound and shielded, and he was the one at his ease. How could she have been such a fool? She was not fit to be Aes Sedai, not if her block crumbled this instant. She was not fit to be let out alone. They ought to tell Birgitta to make sure she did not fall on her face in the dust trying to cross the street. It was not intentional, but berating herself kept her anger on a slow simmer until the door burst open. It was not Elaine. Shiryam followed Romanda in, with Mirella and Morvrin and Takima close behind. Then Lelaine and Janya, Delena and Baratine and Beonin, more, crowding in until they filled the room. Nynaeve could see others through the door that had no room to close. Those inside peered at her and her weaving so intently that she swallowed hard, and all her fine anger collapsed. And, of course, so did her shield and the bonds holding Loghain. Before Nynaeve could ask somebody to shield him again, Nissau planted herself in front of her. Short as Nissau was, she managed to loom. "Now what is all this nonsense about you healing him?" "Is that what she says she did?" Loghain actually managed to sound surprised. Varalyn crowded in beside Nissau. The slender, red-haired grey loomed by virtue of being as tall as Loghain. "I feared this as soon as everyone began petting her over her discoveries. Once they ran out, the petting stopped, and she was sure to make some wild claim to get it back." "It was letting her moon over Swan and Lyanna," Romanda said firmly. "And this fellow. She should have been told there are things that cannot be healed, and there's an end to it." "But I did," Nynaeve protested. "I did. Please shield him. Please, you must." The Aes Sedai in front of her turned to look at Loghain, opening just enough space for her to see him too. He met all the stares with a bland face. He even shrugged. "I think the least we can do is shield him until we are absolutely certain," Shiryam suggested. Romanda nodded, and a shield sprang into being strong enough to hold a giant, as the glow of Sidar surrounded nearly every woman in the room. Romanda restored a little order by briskly naming six to maintain a lesser but adequate shield. Mirella's hand closed around Nynaeve's arm. "If you will forgive us, Romanda, we need to talk to Nynaeve alone." Shiryam's hand closed on the other arm. "Best if we don't leave it too long." Romanda nodded absently. She was frowning at Loghain. Most of the Aes Sedai were. Nobody was leaving. Shiryam and Mirella pulled Nynaeve to her feet and propelled her toward the door. "What are you doing?" she demanded breathlessly. "Where are you taking me?" Outside, they jostled through the throng of Aes Sedai, many of whom peered at her sharply, even accusingly. They pushed right by Elaine, who grimaced apologetically. Nynaeve looked over her shoulder as the two Aes Sedai hustled her along so quickly she kept stumbling. Not that she expected Elaine to help her, but it might be the last time she saw her. Beonin was saying something to Elaine, who darted away through the crowd. "What are you going to do to me?" Nynaeve moaned. "We could keep you scrubbing pots for the rest of your natural life," Shiryam said conversationally. Mirella nodded. "You could work in the kitchens all day. We could have you switched every day instead. Peel your hide off in strips. Nail you into a barrel and feed you through the bunghole in the end. Only mush, though. Stale mush." Nynaeve's knees sagged. "It was an accident. I swear I didn't mean to." Shiryam gave her a hard shake without slowing a step. "Don't be a fool, child. You may just have done the impossible." "You believe me? You believe me? Why didn't you say something when Nissau and Varalyn and... Why didn't you say something?"
"I said may, child."
Shiryam's voice was depressingly neutral. Another possibility, Mirella said, is that your brain has swollen from strain. Her lidded eyes regarded Nynaeve. You would be surprised at the number of accepted and even novices who claim they've rediscovered some lost talent or found anew. When I was a novice, an accepted named Echiko was so convinced she knew how to fly, she leaped from the top of the tower. Head spinning, Nynaeve looked from one woman to the other. Did they believe her or not? Did they really think her mind had bent? What under the light are they going to do to me? She tried to find words to convince them. She was not lying, not crazy. She had healed Loghain, but her mouth was still working soundlessly when they hurried her into the little tower. Not until they entered what had been a private dining room, a long chamber where now a narrow table stood with chairs behind it near one wall, did Nynaeve realize they had gained a train of followers. More than a dozen Aes Sedai entered on their heels, Nisao folding her arms tightly beneath her breasts, and Dagdara with her chin thrust forward as though meaning to walk through a wall. Shanella and Thurva and all yellow Aja, save Shiriam and Mirella. That table suggested a magistrate's chamber. That line of grim faces spoke of a trial. Nynaeve swallowed hard. Shiriam and Mirella left her standing and walked over to the table to confer quietly, their backs to her. When they turned again, their faces were unreadable. "You claimed that you healed Loghain." There was a hint of contempt in Shiriam's voice. "You claim you healed a gentled man." "You must believe me," Nynaeve protested. "You said you did." She jumped as something unseen struck her hard across the hips. "Remember yourself, accepted," Shiriam said coldly. "Do you make this claim?" Nynaeve stared at the woman. Shiriam was the one crazed, bouncing back and forth this way. Still, she managed a respectful, "Yes, Aes Sedai." Dagdara snorted like canvas ripping. Shiriam gestured to quiet a murmur among the yellows. "And you did it by accident, you say? If that's the case, I suppose there is no chance of you showing proof by doing it again." "How could she?" Mirella said, looking amused. "Amused? If she fumbled her way into it blindly, how could she possibly repeat it? But that would not matter unless she actually did the thing in the first place." "Answer me," Shiriam snapped, and that invisible switch struck again. This time Nynaeve managed not to leap. "Is there any chance you can remember even part of what you did?" "I remember, Aes Sedai," she said sullenly, tensing for another blow. It did not come, but she could see the glow of Sidar around Shiriam now. That glow seemed threatening. A small commotion at the door, and Carlinia and Beonin pushed ahead through the line of yellow sisters, one shoving Swan ahead of her, the other Lyanna. "They did not want to come," Beonin announced in an exasperated tone. "Can you believe that they tried to tell us that they were busy?" Lyanna was as blank-faced as any Aes Sedai, but Swan darted sullen, angry looks at everybody, especially Nynaeve. Finally, Nynaeve understood. Finally, everything came together. The Yellow Sister's presence, Shiriam and Mirella believing, then not believing, threatening her, snapping at her. It was all a purpose. All to make her angry enough to work her healing on Swan and Lyanna to prove herself to the Yellows. No. By their faces, they were here to see her fail, not succeed. She made no effort to hide the firm tug she gave her braid. In fact, she did it again, in case anyone had missed the first time. She wanted to smack all their faces. She wanted to dose them with a concoction of herbs that would make them sit down on the floor and cry like babies just from the smell. She wanted to yank their hair out and strangle them with it. Do I have to put up with this nonsense?" Swan growled. "I have important work to do, but if it were only heading fish, it would be more Oh, shut up!" Nynaeve broke in testily. One step, and she seized Swan's head in both hands as if she intended to break the woman's neck. She had believed that nonsense, even the barrel. They had manipulated her like a puppet. Sidar filled her, and she channeled as she had with Loghain, blending all of the five powers. She knew what she was looking for this time, that almost not there at all sense of something cut, spirit and fire to mend the break, and... For a moment Swan only stared, expressionless. Then the glow of Sidar enveloped her. Gasps filled the room. Slowly Swan leaned forward and kissed Nynaeve on either cheek. A tear leaked down her face, then another, and abruptly Swan was weeping, hugging herself and shaking. The gleaming aura around her faded away. Shiryam quickly folded her into comforting arms. Shiryam looked as though she might cry too. The rest of the room was staring at Nynaeve. The shock shining through all that Aes Sedai's serenity was quite satisfying, and the disgruntlement, too. Shanella's eyes, pale blue in a dark, pretty face, seemed about to fall out of her head. Nisal's mouth hung open until she saw Nynaeve looking at her and snapped it shut.
"What made you think of using fire?"
Dagdara asked in a strangled voice that sounded entirely too high for such a big woman.
"And earth? You used earth. Healing is spirit, water, and air."
That opened the floodgate, questions from every throat. But they were all the same question, really, just phrased differently.
"I don't know why," Nynaeve replied when she found an opening. "It just seemed right. I've almost always used everything."
Which produced a round of admonitions. Healing was spirit, water, and air. It was dangerous to experiment with healing. A mistake could kill not only you, but your patient. She said nothing in reply, but the warnings died off quickly in rueful glances and smoothed skirts. She had not killed anyone, and she had healed what they said could not be healed. Lyanna wore such a hopeful smile that it was almost painful. Nynaeve approached her with a smile of her own, masking the smoldering irritation inside. The yellow Aja and all its vaunted knowledge of healing that she had been ready to beg on her knees to share. She knew more of healing than any of them. "Watch carefully now. You'll not get another chance soon to see it done." She felt the joining clearly as she channeled, though she still could not have said what it was she had joined. It felt different than with Loghain. It had with Swan as well. But as she kept telling herself, men and women were different. "Light, I'm lucky this works on them as well as it did on him." That brought up an uncomfortable line of speculation. What if some things had to be healed differently in men than in women? Maybe she did not know so very much more than the yellows after all. Lyanna's reaction differed from Swan's. No tears. She embraced Sidar and smiled beatifically, then released it, though the smile remained. Then she flung her arms around Nynaeve and hugged her till her ribs creaked, whispering, "Thank you, thank you, thank you," over and over. A murmur rose among the yellows, and Nynaeve prepared to bask in their compliments. She would accept their apologies gracefully. Then she heard what they were saying.
"Used fire and earth as if she were trying to bore a hole through stone."
That from Dagdara. "A smoother touch would be better," Shanella agreed.
"See where fire might be useful in problems with the heart," Thurva said, tapping her long nose.
Beldemain, a plump Arafelin with silver bells in her hair, nodded thoughtfully.
"If the earth were combined with air just so, you see, fire woven into water, earth blended with the water..."
Nynaeve gaped. They had forgotten her completely. They thought they could do what she had just showed them better than she could. Mirella patted her arm.
"You did very well," she murmured. "Don't worry. They will be all praises later. Right now they are still a little taken aback."
Nynaeve sniffed loudly, but none of the yellows seemed to notice. "I hope this at least means I don't have to scrub pots anymore." Shiryam's head whipped around with a startled expression. "Why, child? Whatever gave you that notion?" She still had an arm around Swan, who was dabbing at her eyes with a lace handkerchief in considerable embarrassment. If anyone could break any rule they chose, do whatever they chose, and escape punishment merely by doing some good to balance it, the world would be chaos. Nynaeve sighed heavily. She should have known. Stepping out from the other yellows, Nisao cleared her throat, and in passing shot Nynaeve a glare that could only be called accusatory. "I suppose this means we will have to gentle Loghain again?" She sounded as though she wanted to deny any of it had happened. Heads began nodding, and then Carlinia spoke, like an icicle stabbed into the room. "Can we?" Every eye turned to her, but she went on calmly, coolly. "Ethically, can we consider supporting a man who can channel, a man trying to gather other men who can, while at the same time we go on as before, gentling those we find? Practically, what effect will it have on him when he learns? Distressing as it may be, as matters stand, he will see us as separate from the tower, and more importantly, from Elida and the Red Aja. If we gentle even one man, we may lose that distinction, and with it our chance to gain a hold on him before Elida does." Silence cloaked the room when she stopped. Aes Sedai exchanged troubled looks, and those directed at Nynaeve made Nissau's look laudatory. Sisters had died in capturing Loghain, and even if he was safely shielded again, she had given them him to deal with all over again and a worse pickle besides. "I think you should go," Shiriam said softly. Nynaeve was not about to argue. She made her curtsies as quickly and carefully as she could, and did her best not to run in leaving. Outside, Elaine rose from the stone step. "I'm sorry, Nynaeve," she said, brushing her skirt. "I was so excited I blurted out everything to Shiriam before I realized Romunda and Delana were there." "It doesn't matter," Nynaeve said heavily, starting down the crowded street. "It would have gotten out sooner or later. It just was not fair, though. I did something they said couldn't be done, and I still have to scrub pots. Elaine, I don't care what you say, we have to go. Carlinia was talking about getting a hold on Rand. This lot won't be any better than Elida. Tom or Julin will get horses for us, and Birgitta can just bite her elbow." "I'm afraid it's too late," Elaine said miserably. "Word is spreading already." Larissa Lindell and Zenaire Godar swooped down from opposite directions like hawks on either side of Nynaeve. Larissa was a bony woman whose plainness almost overcame Aes Sedai agelessness, Zenaire slightly plump and haughty enough for two queens, but both wore faces of eager anticipation. They were yellow Aja, though neither had been in the room when she healed Swan and Lyanna. "I want to see you go through everything step by step, Nynaeve," Larissa said, laying hold of an arm. "Nynaeve," Zenaire said, seizing the other arm, "I wager that I will find 100 things you never thought of if you repeat the weave often enough." Salita Toranis, Tyron, and almost as dark as one of the sea folk seemed to pop out of nowhere. "Others ahead of me, I see. Well, burn my soul if I'll wait in line." "I was here first, Salita," Zenaire said firmly, and tightened her grip. "I was first," Larissa said, tightening hers. Nynaeve shot a look of pure horror at Elaine, and got commiseration in return and a shrug. This was what Elaine had meant about too late. She would not have a waking moment to herself after this. "Angry?" Zenaire was saying. "I know 50 ways at the front of my head to make her angry enough to chew rocks." "I can think of 100, Larissa said. "I intend to break her block if it's the last thing I do." Magla Daronos shouldered her way into the group, and she had the shoulders for it. She looked as if she worked the sword or a blacksmith's hammer. "You will break it, Larissa? Ha! I do have several ways in mind already to draw it out of her." Nynaeve just wanted to scream. It was all Swan could do not to embrace Saidar and hold it, but she thought she might start crying again. That would never do. Besides, it would seem like some fool novice's display to the women crowding around her in the waiting room. Every expression of wonder and delight, every warm welcome as if she had been away for years, came as balm, especially from those who had been friends before she became Amarlin, before time and duty pulled them apart. Lalaine and Delana wrapped their arms around her as they had not in long years. Moiraine had been the only one closer, the only one beside Lyanna she had managed to keep after donning the stole, and duty had helped keep them together. "It is so good to have you back," Lalaine laughed. "So very good," Delana murmured warmly. Swan laughed and had to scrub tears from her cheeks. Light, what was the matter with her? She had not wept this easily as a child. Maybe it was just joy at regaining Sidar, at all the warmth around her. The light knew altogether it was enough to unsettle anybody. She had never dared dream this day might come, and now that it had, she held nothing against any of these women. Not their cold distance before, not their insistence that she remember her place. The line between Aes Sedai and not Aes Sedai was clear. She had insisted on it before she was stilled, and it went without saying that she would again. And she knew how stilled women had to be dealt with for their own good, and the good of those who could still channel. Had to be dealt with. How strange it was that that would never be so again. From the corner of her eye she saw Gareth Bryn trotting up the stairs at the side of the room. "Excuse me a moment," she said, and hurried after him. Even hurrying meant stopping every two steps to accept another congratulation all the way to the stairs, so she did not catch up until he was striding down a corridor on the second floor. Rushing ahead, she planted herself in front of him. His mostly gray hair was wind-blown, his square face and worn buff coat dusty. He looked as solid as stone. Lifting a sheaf of papers, he said, "I have to drop this off, Swan," and tried to step around her. She moved to block him. "I've been healed. I can channel again." He nodded. Just nodded. "I heard some talk. I suppose this means you'll be channeling my shirts clean from now on. Maybe they actually will be clean now. I've regretted letting Min